This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
There are some beautiful pictures this week in The New Yorker of hijabs, Islamic head coverings in a range of styles and colors and patterns. They're pretty stunning, definitely not what you'd expect, and you can take a look at newyorker.com. Staff writer Judah Thurman went to talk to their designer, Nyla Limus. Limus is also a model and the founder of a modeling agency called Under Wraps. She represents Muslims and other women with a different standard of modesty than the fashion world at large.
Beautiful.
On a very hot Saturday in August, I went downtown to Lower Manhattan to a photography studio where the temperature was about 42 degrees, and I watched a photo shoot on which the two models, two very beautiful young women, were hijabis. They were modeling hijabs that one of the models, Nyla Limus, had designed. Normally, we associate the hijab with a black headscarf, but it doesn't have to be. And Nyla, partly because she's so exuberant herself, and as she says, my taste runs to jazzy, she loves vibrant colors, she loves African fabric, she loves prints, she loves glitter. So her hijabs are very, very fanciful, and they're sort of a cross between an Easter bonnet and, you know, one of the great Easter bonnets you especially see in African-American neighborhoods or that you see at the races at Ascot. She loves leopard skin. She loves taffeta. She loves West African prints. She can whip up a hijab out of almost any sort of fabric. It seems to need some body for the turbans and for the ziggurats. You know, there's some wonderful ziggurat-shaped hijabs. You pin them in place. It's not like you go to a hat shop and you buy a hat and you plop it on your head.
Take a break. 2 second break.
Okay.
The eyes.
Yes.
Focus.
The eyes.
All right. Good.
After the shoot, I sat down with Nyla in a quiet corner to talk about the shoot, to talk about her work as a designer, and to talk about the agency. Were you born into a Muslim family, or did you make the decision to convert yourself?
I was born into a Muslim family, and in all actuality, I was the only born Muslim sibling. My mother, my father, and my sisters converted to the religion as a family.
Uh-huh.
So I was the last born, so I was born into the religion.
Let's talk about the agency. What were you doing something before you started this? Did you have another kind of job? How did you found the agency, and when did that happen?
I was working prior to the agency as a clothing designer, which I still have a clothing line, and as a wardrobe stylist. And in working with that company, I just met a lot of models, and these are all industry high, you know, paid models,
mm-hmm.
that had like body complexes and really weren't really happy with themselves and what they were doing. And a lot of it was ones that were married or that were mothers, and they kind of felt a little like they were compromising to be in this industry, but not comfortable with maybe what they were wearing. Like, as a mom, I don't really want to wear, like, the string bikinis, but my agent says I have to, you know, in order to make my money, because this is what I do as a career. And I just felt like that was unfortunate.
So 3 or 4 years ago, she had the idea of starting an agency for modest and Muslim models. And she called it under wraps because to some degree, but not to an extreme degree, the women are under wraps. Her guidelines for the clients who hire the models are that they have to have same-sex dressing room, they have to have a full-length robe in the dressing room, and that no male stylists or makeup people or hair people or crew members will intrude on their privacy and or touch them. So this was a very daring and, for New York anyway, for the United States, an apparently unique idea, a Muslim modeling agency.
You have about eight models working for you. Mm-hmm. Tell me about them. They're not all Muslim.
They're not all Muslim. No, I have 5 Muslim models, and I have 3 non-Muslim models. What's unique about the agency as far as the mix of the Muslim models and what I call my modest models, which aren't Muslim, but we all have the same concept, mm-hmm. just various levels of modesty, is how we all interact with each other. It becomes like a learning of religions and faiths and like a melting pot where it's easy conversation, where a lot of times when you're discussing different religions, sometimes it can turn into like a battleground. You're like, what's right. going on? But because the commonality is that they're all models, we can like easily have these dialogues.
Do you ever work with Orthodox Jewish?
I actually have a Jewish model. She's we work on and off. A lot of her scheduling is tight, and definitely on Saturdays, you know, she's not working.
Right.
So, but we're so similar.
No, I'm saying it's more similar than not.
More
similar.
Oh yes, I agree completely. Yeah, exactly. The dress is like so similar.
Yes.
I mean, except for a little bit of the skin, bottom of the leg, you know. But
right.
the skirts have to be really long. The arms are covered.
Right. The hair has to be covered.
Exactly. And that's a story in itself, because you have a Muslim woman who's representing a Jewish model, and that becomes like, well, how does that work? But it's like, we have so many more similarities than differences. It works out just fine. But
do they all experience, or have they all, as models, experienced sort of a sense of conflict with the demands to expose their bodies? Do they have ambivalence about self-exposure? Because if you are a model, you are exposing
mm-hmm.
yourself,
mm-hmm.
and you're exposing yourself, your beauty, you're selling your
right.
beauty.
Mm-hmm. I haven't really heard that from my Muslim models, because they joined the agency with that particular mindset, so they never were really conflicted in that way. Now, as far as my 3 non-Muslim models, they feel like this is more of a home for them, where they don't feel like they're settling to be, you know, to be a model.
I raised this paradox with Nyla herself. I said, modeling is about arousing desire. How do you reconcile the notion of basically positioning yourself as an object of temptation, which is what you are, with the notion of the Islamic notion of guarding its daughters from being objects of temptation? And she said, no, she seemed to feel that on the contrary, this would help to dispel stereotypes that non-Muslims have about covering and about who and what Muslim women and girls can be. So she sees this actually as a sort of, as not in any way as regressive, but as a very progressive, even radical foray into changing people's attitudes. I'm very interested in the notion of color, because I think for many non-Muslim people, we associate Islamic dress for women with black
mm-hmm.
or the blue of the burqa. How does it work with color? Where is the other are there subcultures in which the dress is very bright?
You know, naturally, culture and tradition kind of plays a role into any religion that you practice.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they're Muslim by faith, you know, they're Muslim, but they're Malaysian, or Muslim, but Jordanian. So they're going to pick up some of those stylistic ways of just where they're from and incorporate that
mm-hmm.
into, okay, well, Islamically, I need to be modest, but I still want to embrace bold, exciting jewels, crystals, you know, and you can do that. Islamically, there's no guidelines on that.
There's no guidelines.
No, there's no guidelines on that. As long as your parts of your body are covered and your clothing is not skin tight.
Okay, yeah, I wanted to ask about that. So explain that to us, because some of the clothes that you've designed that women have modeled, there's no flesh showing, there's no skin showing.
Yeah, but they have a fit.
They're definitely form-fitting.
Well, my design aesthetic is a little more kind of fit flare. Sometimes there'll be tube or like strapless dresses, which would be more fitted in the bust area, and then flow out empire waist down.
But is strapless okay?
It's not, strapless is not okay for a Muslim woman to wear just as a strapless dress.
Right.
Now, we can wear a strapless dress, but we'll
over
either,
something.
Right, we might wear a shirt under it, long sleeve shirt, or you might wear like a blazer over it, or a cami or something
right.
of that nature that gives you sleeves.
Right.
So, in the Quran, when it speaks to our guidelines of how we dress, it doesn't say black. It doesn't say colors. It just says what we need to cover and how we need to carry ourselves. Now, how you interpret that is, you know, that's up to anyone. When you practice your religion, you read and you interpret what's comfortable for you.
Well, there's a stereotype about submission and obedience.
Well, yeah, that's true. And I think that garment that they show often to kind of drill it in your mind will makes you think that way as well.
Yeah. The weekend that I went to the shoot, it was a torrid weekend, and it was torrid everywhere. It was very torrid in the south of France, where in the past month, there's been a tremendous controversy about the banning of the burkini. A burkini is a garment that was invented fairly recently. It's a sort of neck-to-ankle covering that allows modest Muslim women to go into the water on the beach, which is a sort of jokey word. It comes from burqa. It's not at all, it doesn't look like a burqa, but it's burqa and bikini. So the French were reacting to, of course, many things, the recent terrible acts of terrorism and the influxes of refugees, anti-French sentiment in Muslim neighborhoods. So they passed a burkini ban. You could appear topless, you could appear in a micro-string bikini, but not covered. And so while we were in the photo studio, women were being forced to disrobe, forced to take off their burkinis in some pretty horrific images on the beaches of France. So I think, though, that some of the reaction that people have is that these women are being oppressed by the obligation to wear these clothes. And it's true that in the summer, you see somebody in head-to-toe black on a 95-degree day, you have to wonder if it isn't oppressive. But then you have to remind yourself that they have made this choice, and it is a free country.
From my angle and what I wanted to accomplish, especially with breaking down the stereotypes and keeping and maintaining your modesty or like your femininehood and your womanness, and I feel like we've lost a sense of that somewhere. I don't know when, because in like 40s, 50s, 60s, I mean, all women were kind of dressing modest. I mean, they had their poodle skirts and their fitted shirts, but it was like not skin out.
1968.
And plungy.
That's
was that it?
Yeah.
Was that
like, actually, you know what it was? It was earlier. It was the year they invented pantyhose.
Oh.
Because you could then wear short skirts. You couldn't before because women had garters, and unless you were going to go looking like a hooker,
you could
walk out. But then suddenly that was the lead into the miniskirt.
That was
one of them. That was one of the technological steps to
That's one
the
that
wild,
took us in the route.
The youth
now
quake.
It's party dresses on a Tuesday. I'm like, are you going grocery shopping with that on? Oh, gosh.
Boundaries are a feminist issue. So in that sense, I think you could say a hijab is a refusal in some ways to objectify yourself sexually, a refusal to court desire from strange eyes. It's a boundary between you and the public. When you're uncovered and walking down the street, let's say you're a young and attractive person, you're sort of a morsel that's out there for to be devoured visually, right? Covering is a way of saying, no, I don't consent. I don't consent to be devoured visually. I don't consent to be looked at with lust. I don't consent. It's a question of consensual participation in the public sphere. In that sense, it seems to be in line with many of the sexual guidelines that have been passed in universities about what constitutes appropriate sexual contact, making sure that everybody is in agreement. These are my boundaries. These are my boundaries for being looked at. These are my boundaries for keeping my body private.
Judith Thurman, a staff writer at The New Yorker. She spoke with designer and model Nyla Limas. And you can see some of those hijabs that they were talking about at newyorker.com.